We're keeping an eye on the relief bill that hasn't been signed by President Trump and a car explosion in Nashville, adding to this rough year. Yes, a global pandemic, but so many other stories. President Trump impeached but not convicted. Terrible wildfires. The shooting deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. In the next week, we'll have several end-of-year conversations. Today, one with one of our favorite guests, Lise Doucette, the BBC's chief international correspondent. Lise, you've covered conflicts all over the world. How would you put this year in perspective?
I've never, ever covered a story where there is one threat, one danger, one crisis affecting our one world. This is not just a question of Yemenis a step away from famine or Afghanistan on the brink of another war or some country in Africa battling a pandemic in its region. This was a global pandemic, and that's quite an extraordinary thing. This was a virus which underlined that borders in our time really cannot contain the threats of our time, whether they're this virus or the threat of extremist groups or, of course, migration, which tests both our political systems as well as our humanity. And it was also a time where we all understood palpably that health is a public good, and that the scientists of our time are really the heroes of our time to keep all of us safe.
Well, not everyone wanted to listen to the scientists, and not just here in the U.S. But I'm also wondering if this pandemic revealed a problem with the global infrastructure built to respond to things like this. President Trump slammed the WHO, but others were also critical of that international agency. Early on, they were accused of having maybe an unwillingness to pressure China a little more. On the other hand, people thought in China coming up with the DNA of this virus so quickly and sharing it was noble. What's your sense of how the world responded?
You're absolutely right, Robin, that even a global crisis like this has also underlined that we are divided, which is why since the beginning of this pandemic, when it was absolutely clear it was a global pandemic, there was a mantra recited time and again by the world's humanitarian leaders that no one is safe until we are all safe. And I have to say that I saw this firsthand when I started the year. I spent 3 weeks in Yemen, where even before the pandemic, the health system was on the brink of collapse. And in the middle of the year, I went to Afghanistan, another country where the health system is absolutely perilous position. And we saw during these months where everyone, when there was so much fear of the virus, that when countries like Afghanistan and Yemen, the most vulnerable of the countries, tried to get PPE on the world market, all of it had been bought up by the wealthier nations. The head of the WHO in Afghanistan told me he had sleepless nights because there were days where they simply did not have a single drop of reagents, which is a critical compound used in testing for COVID-19. They finally got it, but it was a real scramble. But it is, again, back to that mantra, no one is safe until everyone is safe. And yes, the institutions are not perfect. They have made mistakes. But unless we all pull in the same direction, these institutions will be weaker still. Mm.
A couple other headlines from the past year. Iran shot down a Ukrainian jet by mistake, it turned out, but 176 people killed. Afghanistan, a place you know so well. President Trump is pulling thousands of American troops out, even though there's Taliban violence that hasn't ended, attacks claimed by ISIS and the Taliban fighting each other. Your thoughts on Afghanistan emerging whole from this year?
There is a joke we have in Afghanistan, but it's an example of the black humor that Afghans are quite famous for, is that with every year, almost every year since the attacks of September 11 in 2001 toppled the Taliban, Afghans and their allies have said, this is a critical year. And the next year, this is a critical year. Well, next year is the critical year of all critical years. In the sense, as you said, this is according to the unprecedented deal signed between the United States and the Taliban in February of this year that all U.S.-led NATO forces, the remainder of them, are to leave by May the 1st. But when I was in Afghanistan, I spent 6 weeks in Afghanistan a few months ago, and General Miller, who's the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, said that withdrawal is contingent on both sides keeping their commitment under that February deal. And the Taliban commitments include providing security guarantees that they will not allow Afghanistan to become a safe haven again. And the UN and, you know, members of Congress still say that the Taliban have not kept their word on that. I think it's quite clear now. This is next year, 2021, is going to be the year that either on the battlefield or through the negotiations, the Taliban are going to return to power. And of course, Afghans and their allies, including the United States, are hoping against hope that that process of a new political order will be achieved through the negotiations, which began in September, and not through another descent into the kind of chaos and violence that Afghanistan has seen time and again.
You mentioned the Trump administration striking that deal with the Taliban. The Trump administration also struck historic deals between Arab countries, some Arab countries, and Israel. But the president also pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord, the Iran nuclear deal. Your sense, I mean, people understand that things will probably change when Biden becomes president and some of these deals that were broken will be maybe reconsidered. What, from your vantage point, what are you hearing from world leaders? What is the expectation that will of what will happen?
There is an expectation that now there will be a president in the White House with a team which believes in the transatlantic relationship. So there's already been a sigh of relief at NATO headquarters, at the European Commission. But I think there is also a recognition that the United States has changed and the world has changed. And that, yes, America may be back speaking the same language, but that other countries will have to play their part. Because it was interesting, whenever in the countries I visited in the last month, including Afghanistan, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, all of the leaders there said, we know that President-elect Biden's main priority is going to be the United States of America. And then he will look at the rest of the world.
A couple other headlines again from this past year. The Tokyo Olympics postponed because of the pandemic. A gunman in Nova Scotia just in April killed 22 people. Oil prices hit record lows because of the coronavirus lockdowns and restrictions. And of course, the global economy has just been torched by this. Your sense, what are some stories that maybe are not, I mean, there's just been so many, maybe are not getting the attention that they should?
A lot of other stories were squeezed out this year. What was happening, as we've heard time and again from David Beasley, who's the executive director of the World Food Programme, and now the organization that won the Nobel Peace Prize this year, that it was a hunger pandemic that would end up killing more people than the deadly coronavirus. Because, back to my original point that this is a virus which has crossed borders and affected so many of us around the world, no matter where we live or how we live, but it has affected people in different ways. And in many of the countries I visited, it was seen as certainly as the lesser threat. You couldn't have a full lockdown in a place like Afghanistan because there's so many people live from hand to mouth. If they don't work, their family does not eat. And it simply comes down to that terrifying arithmetic.
Well, you mentioned, hunger. And here in the United States, more people are on food lines than ever in recent memory. And it's a reminder that on this day, I mean, whether or not you believe the sacred aspect of the story, it's a story of people who had nothing to eat and no place to stay. And we are still there at the end of 2020. Lise Doucette, the BBC's chief international correspondent, thank you so much. And in that way that we, find it, a Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, and Robin, you know, I'll end with a letter that I received this year after I had done a broadcast where I spoke about Yemen and Afghanistan. And a man wrote me a card and he said, you know, I work in a supermarket pushing trolleys, and I'm not sure whether I'll be able to keep my job because of the lockdown. But I heard you talk about Yemen and Afghanistan, and I thought, even though my situation is really bad, there are people in other countries which are facing something even worse. So he put a £10 note into a plastic pouch and said, when you go back to visit some of these much, much worse off countries, please give this money to someone who needs it more than I do. And I think we should all try to end this year thinking of kindness when this cruel virus still continues to make its way through all of our lives.
Socially distanced kindness. Lise Doucette, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. Happy Christmas and Happy New Year.
Same to you. A great story.